Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for waiting. We'd like to welcome everyone to Bradesco's third quarter 2019 earnings conference call. This call is being broadcasted simultaneously through the internet in the investor relations website banco.bradesco/ir-en. In that address, you can also find the presentation available for download. We inform that all participants will only be able to listen to the conference call during the company's presentation. After the presentation, there will be a question and answer session, when further instructions will be given. Should any participant need assistance during this call, please press star zero to reach the operator. Before proceeding, let me mention that forward-looking statements are based on beliefs and assumptions of Banco Bradesco's management and on information currently available to the company. They involve risks, uncertainties, and assumptions because they relate to future events and therefore depend on circumstances that may or may not occur in the future. Investors should understand that general economic conditions, industry conditions, and other operating factors could also affect the future results of Banco Bradesco and could cause results to differ materially from those expressed in such forward-looking statements. Now, I will turn the conference over to Mr. Carlos Firetti, Market Relations Director.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to our third quarter 2019 earnings conference call. We have today with us here Mr. Otavio de Lazari, Bradesco's Chief Executive Officer, André Cano, Executive Vice President and CFO, Vinicius Albernaz, Bradesco Seguros Chief Executive Officer, and Leandro Miranda, Executive Director and Investor Relations for Banco Bradesco. Now, I turn the floor to Leandro.
Thank you very much, Firetti. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for your participation in our third quarter 2019 earnings conference call. We'd like to start sharing our view on the Brazil's macro moment. Pretty much we have a positive view about the moment of inflation that Brazil is currently experiencing, which finally seems to indicate a good path of gradual, more consistent, and healthy growth with inflation under control. That's the best part of it. We notice that the presence of a correct public spirit ensuring Brazil's needs has allowed the approval of the pension reform, which is fundamental to the long-term sustainability of the country, public finances. And finally, a favorable environment for approval of a positive agenda for the Brazilian economy. The combination of an adequate and clear fiscal and monetary policies has made it possible to effectively control inflation and has enabled the continuous reduction of interest rates. This should definitely contribute to improved growth and, as a consequence, credit that shall benefit the most. In this context, we can perceive a lower risk scenario that is beginning to motivate investments, job creation, and consumption by private economic agents, leading to a more gradual economic activity recovery. And this is very positive for our organization as a whole, which got prepared and is uniquely positioned to capture the benefits of a positive economic cycle. In slide three, we bring a few highlights of the third quarter that I'd like to share with you. First of all, the expanded loan portfolio keeps growing in a very healthy and well-diversified manner in the higher growth and return segments, as that of individuals and SMEs. While at the same time, it's requiring lower provision for loan losses. The new loan vintages are still improving. Our loan book increased by 3.2% in the quarter and by 10.5% in the annual comparison. We especially highlight the performance of the individual segment, which grew 19 in 12 months. Our fee revenues, which has been under pressure, have been adjusted in the previous quarters and already show signs of improvement with growth in major lines. We believe it should keep the recovery. Our expenses, which represented a relatively strong increase due to a planned strategy of ours, have already started to return to their regular pace, and we do believe that's going to continue this way after a stringent and comprehensive program of expenditure reductions and controls that we'll detail ahead for yourselves. We are determined to keep them under control now that we have made all the necessary adjustments. We have been able once again to present a very strong quarter with a new record in our net income that reached 6.5 billion reais, growing 19.6% in annual comparison. In the nine-month period of  2019, our net income of 19.2 billion reais grew 22.3% and operational income 11.6%. As a result, our return on equity in the nine-month remains above 20%, and that's the way we want to keep it. Our level one BIS ratio reached 14.7%, 250 basis points growth in the last 12 months. Finally, it's worth highlighting the extraordinary dividend of 8 billion reais that we have recently announced and paid in order to keep an active management of our capital, considering growth opportunities and our perception of an optimal capital structure given the economic momentum. Now I'm going to jump to slide five in order to present you some details on our figures. Our net income, interest income grew 5.7% in the nine-month period year-on-year and  5.9% year-on-year in the quarter. The performance in this line indicates that we can stay at the center of the guidance. That's our belief. The risk profile of new loan vintages continue to be very good. Our expanded loan loss provision expenses decreased by 4.3% in the quarter, accumulating a reduction of 4.9% considering the nine-month comparison. As a result, our net income recorded a 19.6% year-on-year growth in the third quarter and 22.3% in the nine-month comparison. We bring more details on the figures in the following slides. Moving to slide six, our ROE reached 20.2% considering the third quarter. However, for analysis purposes, adjusting our equity by 8 billion reais, extraordinary dividends, as I have mentioned before, the ROE in the quarter would have been in the range of 21.5%. The ROA was 1.9%. And as we have affirmed throughout the last quarters, we believe we can keep the ROE above the 20% level. Despite the impacts from lower interest rates and spreads, a slight decrease in visage ahead, our future returns benefit from a stronger loan volume growth, a more favorable portfolio mix, and definitely scale. As the economy grows and develops itself, we shall reach a very good level of scale. Looking at the longer term, considering the maintenance of low interest rates and falling spread scenario, we could see a reduction in returns, but we also believe they will still remain at high levels, especially because of the lower level of risk that demand less provisions as we have seen in the last quarters. Going to slide seven, our loan portfolio growth reaccelerated, as we had affirmed it should happen closing the third quarter at 10.5%. The highlight was the segment of individuals. We recorded a 5.5% growth in the quarter and 19% year-on-year, with all lines showing a good performance. It's worth to highlight the personal loans, which improvements in the product journey, mainly the digital channel, 62% growth, competitive rates, longer tenure, and increased use of analytics led to the portfolio record of a 9.7% growth in the quarter and 36.2% in the annual comparison. In payroll loan, we grew 24.1% year-on-year, and we have a unique position in this product due to our distribution network. Our CEO mentioned a little bit earlier that we are doing around 74% of all the payroll loans from public entities that has come to the market so far. Public sector payroll agreements and public pension system processing, we are all the leading bank. 78% of our origination is carried out at our branches without commissions. In mortgage, we grew 16% and 21% in vehicle financing. It's also worth noting that the growth in cards, credit cards, which accelerated to 12.5% year on year. And in the company's portfolio, there was an acceleration in SMEs, which grew 8.3% year on year, 12.9% adjusting for the migration of customers between segments, and a slowdown in corporate. The increase is stronger in small companies than in mid-sized companies. So basically, we still keep on focus on individuals and SMEs. That's going to be our main position going on. Jumping to slide 8, we show that the evolution in our credit origination remains strong, both in individuals and companies, with individuals growing in the quarter 35.5% year-on-year and companies 40.8%. Now, if you allow me to take you to slide 9, we discuss our net interest income. Our total NII grew 5.9% year-on-year, with acceleration in the credit margin growth to 5.2%, while the margin with the market remained practically flat in the quarter. And that's how we see in the following month. The positive effect of the mix and volume growth during quarter has outweighed the negative effect of falling spreads. Our net spread is going very well. We believe that the effect of the positive mix and volume growth should continue to offset the front book, the spread reduction, and the renewal of the back book. Moving to slide 10, when we have the delinquency, we can see that it remained flat in individuals, had an increase in SMEs, and a higher increase in large companies as a result of a few specific cases. So we are not concerned at all in this line of business. However, this has not affected the low loss provision expense, as the cases were mostly fully provisioned. Overall, we see the delinquency under control and aligned with our product mix strategy. Now, on page 11, you can see that we have maintained a good performance in terms of provision expenses, with a reduction in the quarter in nominal terms, as the case that led to the increase in NPL creation were less provisioned. The cost of risk ratio dropped 20 bps to 2.3%. In slide 12, we show the NPL creation per segment. The increase in the quarter is concentrated pretty much in specific corporate cases. Moving to slide 13, you can see that in our fees, our performance improved in the third quarter, as we expected since our presentations and talks to the market, with a 3.7% growth year-on-year and 2.5% in a nine-month comparison. It's worth noting the good performance in the annual comparison of the custody and brokerage house, consortium management, checking accounts, and also loan operation lines. Asset management fees start to show good results, growing 4.8% in the quarter, despite a reduction in the private pension management fees. We have additional initiatives being implemented in the wealth management segment, which should certainly produce increasing results in the coming months. Now, as far as operating expenses are concerned, and you can see that on page 14, the increase of costs above the guidance was mainly due to important decisions taken earlier this year that we have somehow shared with you throughout the year, such as the implementation of the new branch network compensation program, an increased amount of labor suits settlements, reinforcements in some fields such as the Next, and the hiring of data scientists. We understand we have to improve our performance in expenses, and we have already taken measures for that as described in the following slides. We believe that we have made all the good work in terms of revenues, and now we are really committed to reduce costs from now on, as we have reached our best levels in terms of the institution as a whole. In slide 15, We highlight the measures which should allow us to have a much better performance in costs in 2020. We expect to close a total of 150 branches in 2019. Therefore, as we have closed 50 branches this year, we still have 100 more to come until the end of the year. We do intend to close at least 300 branches in 2020. In future periods, we should have a lower number of employees as a result of the new voluntary dismissal program that is ending today. We shall release some figures ahead, but so far, we have 3,000 employees that have joined the voluntary dismissal program. It's a number higher than we initially thought, what is good for our expenses control. Finally, we believe that the labor suits expenses in 2020 will be lower than this year. Going to slide 16, we can see that the third quarter was very good for the insurance arm. The net income reached 1.89 billion reais, 2.8% growth in the quarter and 28.9% year-on-year. The ROE reached 24.1% in the third quarter. It's also worth noticing the acceleration in premium growth, which reached 12.3% year-on-year, highlighting the strong performance in life and pension, which grew by means 8.3% in the quarter and 18.2% year-on-year. We are doing a very good job there. In the following slide, that is slide 17, we highlight the 20.1% evolution in nine-month net income from insurance in 2019 with a 23.6% ROE. The health and P&C segments stood out in terms of earnings performance. In the ninth-month comparison, which eliminates the seasonality, we recorded improvements in the group's consolidated combined and claims ratio. That's the best way to consider the insurance group, is to look in 12-year periods, and we shall see all the seasonality being equalized. Going to slide 18, we closed the quarter with a quite comfortable BIS ratio of 14.7%. The impact on the BIS ratio of 8 billion reais extraordinary dividends distribution will be partially mitigated by the relocation of insurance group's resources that came through dividends. The extraordinary dividends should lead to a reduction in BIS of 110 basis points, and the Bradesco Seguros dividend should have a positive impact of 6 basis points. Net-net, you have here 60 basis points to come, leading to, as you can see here. Such drop should be further mitigated by the fourth quarter accumulated profits. Going to capital management, we'd like to stress it that, as we have mentioned on October 7th, we announced and already paid on October 23rd, the 8 billion reais extraordinary dividends that pretty much represented a yield of 3%. We find that our distribution of the excess capital generated in our operation will be considering the following aspects: business opportunities, environmental risk level, and a view of an optimal capital structure for the moment. That's the best way to add value to our shareholders. In relation to our guidance for 2019, we can say that we should remain in the middle of the guidance in the expanded portfolio, in the middle of the guidance or slightly higher in the net interest margin, in the lower part of the guidance in fee revenues, above the guidance in operating expenses, above the guidance in earnings from insurance operations, and finally, in the upper part of the guidance in expanded loan loss provisions. Thank you very much for your time, and I'm going to be more than happy to address any questions you may have.
We will now initiate the questions and answer section. If you would like to ask a question, please dial star one. If at any point your question has been answered, you may remove your question from the queue by pressing star two. Our first question comes from George Curie from Morgan Stanley. You may proceed.
Hi, good morning, everyone. I was wondering if you could share with us the thinking behind the branch rationalization a program that you talked about, which is an acceleration from what you've been doing. What is the scope for, if you think a little bit longer term, what is the scope for branch reduction a few years down the road? And what specifically cost savings do you think the 400 branches that you're going to close in the fourth quarter plus next year could represent for your P&L? And my second question is on the outlook for credit growth in 2020. I know you provide formal guidance with the fourth quarter numbers, but if you can just talk about just overall, you know, big picture thoughts of how 2020 could fare vis-a-vis this year. You know, what are the conditions that could drive faster growth next year versus this year? And where do you think you could see better numbers among the different categories that you provide? Thank you.
Okay, thank you, George. So this is Leandro speaking. I'm going to speak here regarding to the rationale behind our branch reduction program, and then Fidesz may add some points here regarding to how much money you can save from that. First of all of our branches have to be profitable. That's the first rule. And we do see how much profitable each one of them are regarding to the business and to all the clients that they do have. We have seeing that we have small branches that are very close to big ones, and so we can be flexible, we can reduce costs and serve our clients even better. So the way we see that is that our advancements in IT, as we are on the edge of technology, and a better rationale behind a better use of our branches, and considering that all the time they shall be profitable, allow us to see that we shall see at least a 300 branch reduction for the coming year. Again, answering our questions regarding to the coming year, we are going to see if the clients are using our branches, and we have to consider that Brazil is a country with different countries. So that means we have different regions with different features, different kind of clients. And so, in this sense, if we have a proper use of our branches, we shall keep it. Otherwise, we shall change it through digital channels.
Jorge, unfortunately, at this point, we don't have a number to share. These 300 branches represent roughly 6.5% of total branches we have in Bradesco. We think, and that adds the 300 branches in 2020, and that adds to some 150 we are closing this year. This is actually, we can say, this is not a isolated movement. Basically, it's part of our rationalization that we'll keep taking the opportunities we find in coming years. But at this point, we don't have the numbers to share.
Yeah, let me get back here to your second question regarding to our guidance. Of course, we have not provided our guidance for the coming year, but I just would like to give you a flavor regarding to where we should go, right? We are pretty much well positioned in individuals and SMEs. That's the place where we want to stay. We see a natural leadership of ourselves in these segments. We have an aggressive bet regarding to Brazil. So as long as Brazil economy grows and develops, we shall see, because of the high unemployment rates, more and more individuals and SMEs to come into the system. And we are the leading bank in this segment. So we shall see ourselves more and more positioning individuals and SMEs. The second point is regarding to the provisions that we shall see for our portfolios. We see the new vintages extremely healthier than the previous ones. We shall consider that it shall come as long as that for quite a while. And then, on the coming year, we shall see the provisions coming along with the growth of the portfolio. But the more important part of that is the net spreads. The net spreads, we are, despite of all the competition that we see in the country, due to this deleverage and de-risk environment that we see in Brazil, we are being able to increase it. And as we get scale, and as we get new clients in the system, we shall continue to perform very, very well. Fees and commissions, we believe that we are on some sort of changing point here. Pretty much we have come from a trend in the first quarter, in the first semester that we're not happy with. We have made all the adjustments regarding to that, especially because of the new interest rate scenario. And then we have been able to harvest all the profits this quarter, but it's still a trend. We pretty much believe that we are on an inflection point here. And as we get new clients on the coming year, this is shall grow. Operating expenses, that's our focus for the moment. We do believe that we are going to be able to keep them below inflation for the coming year, especially because this year we have two different lines of costs. We have the PDE, and we have all the labor suit settlements that were things that we did not used to do in the past. So in the following years, you're going to have a base of comparison as well as you're going to have the ability to see that we shall become it according to inflation. And then in the insurance business, especially in health, we are able to grow and develop as the economy goes by. We have a very prime plan, and overall, we expect to see good years ahead.
That's great. Thanks for the details. Appreciate it.
Our next question, Nicolas Riva from Bank of America. You may proceed.
Yeah, thanks for taking my question. I have only one question on these corporate cases that you say drove the increase in the 90-day NPL ratio by 40 basis points. It looks like you moved them from 90 days overdue to 90-plus days overdue. If I look at slide 11 of the earnings call slides, you say that 1.1 billion reais of the new NPL creation was because of these large corporates. Should I interpret then that the exposure that you have to these corporate clients is 1.1 billion reais or roughly $300 million? And also, can you give some color on these corporate clients, if you can say which sectors they are in, what's the level of coverage on the exposure to these clients, and if you expect to book more provisions for these clients in the fourth quarter? Thanks.
Yeah, Nicolas, thank you for your question. As usual, we don't open the name and sectors of this case when they happen. These are companies that are basically fully provisioned. It's not really something very new. Things that we have been dealing with for some time, so they are fully provisioned. They turned into NPL this quarter, but since they were already provisioned, this is one of the reasons our coverage rate ratio suffered a big reduction this quarter. So you have higher NPLs, but not more provisions because we already had it. The other thing on coverage was the sale of a big loan that we had recovered in the first quarter this year from court recovery. When it came back to our portfolio, it is a performing loan. We brought it back with 100% provisions of its face value. And as a performing loan, we sold it this quarter without major impact on revenues. And the provisions actually the provisions left the balance, so this also had an impact in coverage. But basically, it's not going back to the specific case that we point at amounting 1.1. It's not a single case. There are a few cases, and as I said, fully provisioned.
Thanks very much, Carlos.
Next question comes from Marcos Assunção from Itaú.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. First question, there was a news with Lazari commenting that it would be harder for the banks to post 20% ROE levels in the future. If you could comment or talk a little bit about the main trends that you see that could impact long-term profitability of the banking business in Brazil, it would be helpful. And the second question on the cost side, we understand that a big portion of the cost performance can be explained by the non-structural factors, but looking at your structural cost, it also increased 6% in the first 9 months of the year. So can you comment a little bit also on the main drivers that impacted the structural cost in 2019, please? Thank you.
Hi, Marcos. Leandro speaking. Let me just start by the first comment that you have made relying to our CEO statement. Pretty much it was out of context in the way it was printed in the newspaper. What Lazari has mentioned is that as Brazil evolves throughout the years and as the economy evolves and you see a lack of a decline in interest rates in a world that is you have either zero or negative interest rates, you should not be able to keep 20% ROE because the banks all over the world in development, developing countries do not have 20% ROE. That was his view. Lazari has pointed out in the two calls that he did this morning that we are confident on keeping the 20% ROE for the coming years. We are well adjusted in the segments that grow the most, and with the higher spreads and with lower provisions that are the individuals and SMEs in the country, we are on an inflection point regarding to our fees. And now we are extremely committed and focused to reduce our expenses. So far, we want to keep these levels. And as he also pointed out, we are going to keep an optimum capital structure depending on the economic environment, on the opportunities that we see, also the risks that we have to consider in our provisions. And therefore, at that time, we shall take a decision in order to see how we're going to treat excess capital, as the case may be.
Okay, Marcos. So now going to costs. As you point, we have breaking down the personnel expenses in the structure and the non-structure, as you point. Basically, the structure is growing by 6.4% year on year. We had some hirings this year. Basically, most people related to data science, commercial people, people for investment consultants, next. So this is not a big number of hirings, but we had some in these areas. And also this structural cost grow with the annual salaries readjustments we have every year. So this is the driver for this 6.4. We didn't have major reduction, as I said, in number of people. So that's why it's growing above inflation. On the structural part, we have first the implementation of a bonus program for the branch network employees. Bradesco, until this year, didn't pay any bonus for the account managers in the branches. We based the compensation and the benefits on the career evolution we have here in the bank. And we adopted that. We think it's a very important move from the bank in a number of aspects. So we have this basically coming from zero to the size of a bonus program that reaches roughly something like 35,000 people, roughly. So next year, basically the growth certainly is not going to be the same. It's not going to be much more based on the evolution, on the achievement of the targets that are proposed to these people. The second thing are the provision for labor lawsuits. Bradesco historically haven't been doing agreements on lawsuits. We used to litigate, defending our rights to the end. And considering the cost of carrying litigations here in Brazil, they are corrected by an indexation factor plus inflation, indexation factor plus 1% per month. We decided to change the approach and we started to work on this agreement. So we have a big inventory, a big number of cases, given the fact we didn't do this agreement. So this is the reason we have this increase. It was a decision in the beginning of this year that should ease the cost in the future, but brings higher costs right now. So for next year, we believe these labor lawsuits are going to be more well behaved. I think part of the agreements we have been doing, we already have some impact for the behavior of this line next year. Also looking to the structural part, given the fact we had the voluntary dismissal program finishing this quarter, the day before yesterday, we had 3,000 people enrolled in the program. It closes today, so basically 3,000 is a little bit more than 3% of the personnel, the current base of people we have in the bank. So it should have an impact in the structural part going forward. And on top of that, we have the branch networks restructuring and reduction. As I said, 150 this year, 300 next year. This also will have a positive impact in our costs.
All right. Thank you very much.
Welcome.
Next question, Tito Labarta from Goldman Sachs. You may proceed.
Hi, good afternoon, and thanks for the call. A couple of questions also. I guess first, in thinking about your margins, looked like, performed well in the quarter. But if we look at the spreads were down about 276 basis points. So that was, partially offset by the mix, but also the number of days, right? So if it wasn't for an increase in the number of days, your margin could have been down a bit. So, but how do you think about that, I guess, going into next year? You have lower interest rates, hearing more competition. Do you think there could be some pressure on margins for next year? And second question, in terms of your cost of risk, it came down a bit, even though asset quality deteriorated. I understand you already provisioned for the increase in NPLs in the corporates, but we did see a slight increase in SME NPLs. Consumer NPLs were basically stable, but the mix is shifting towards higher risk loans. So how should we think about the cost of risk going forward? Has it bottomed here? Is there more room for improvement, or should it begin to pick up a bit going into next year? Thank you.
Hey, Tito, Leandro speaking. Let me start with the margins for the coming year. I guess going forward, we shall keep on seeing a very good behavior as long as we are focused on individuals and SMEs. The margins are there. We believe that we are one of the risk scenario, and the individuals, families, and SMEs still have plenty of room to leverage themselves. So we keep on doing that. Regarding to corporate names, we believe that they are going to tap more and more that capital markets, either local or international, as the case may be. And we have a leading investment bank, so it shall benefit our fee lines. That's the way we see it. And regarding to cost of risk, You have seen that we have been able to grow the net spread, and the reason for that are our provisions. We believe that they shall keep on the same pace until the end of the year, and for the following year, especially on the second semester of 2020, we shall see it growing according to the portfolio as a whole.
Okay, thanks, Leandro. That's helpful. Maybe just a follow-up, I guess, in terms of the margins and the mix. Because if you think about the mix, you know, you're growing consumer loans already 20% year over year. Even, you know, the economy is still growing, well, less than 1%, so, although the economy should pick up next year. So, you know, is there room for that mix to continue to shift the way it's been shifting? I know corporate lending, you know, should be kind of continue to be weak, but maybe that picks up from the lows, so maybe you don't get that mixed benefit as much. I don't know, just kind of how you feel about the mix as well, just given you've had very strong growth in consumer and very weak growth in corporate, and maybe that shifts a little bit, no?
Tito, we believe the mix will look like the same. Basically, the segment that is very dynamic, the segments that are very dynamic are individuals and SMEs. So far, corporates are not demanding much. They are not investing. They haven't entered so far in a big investment case. We do believe it will happen probably next year, but we believe the Brazilian capital markets is very liquid, the rates very competitive. So probably they will take part of the needs of corporates, what is not bad. Basically, our role in this relationship is being bankers for our clients and providing them the best access to funding where they find it. So we think that's going to be the profile, lower growth in corporates, even though we might find a lot of other business in the corporate segment. In terms of individuals, we still have 12% unemployment. We think the economy will still go to an improvement. We haven't seen strong growth for almost 5 years. We don't have seen almost any growth, actually, for the last 5 years. The return on that growth actually should have some impact. So I think there are new rounds, in our view, coming from individuals, and also there's also a lot of things we are doing internally in terms of credit modeling, use of analytics. We can see better, understand better the risk of clients, and this is, for instance, one of the key things behind the very strong growth in personal loans. That is a business we are growing almost 36%. In SMEs, we are doing okay. We are doing well in the small companies, especially. I think there are some good dynamics there. The SME is still about to see the best days. They probably will accelerate with the economy. So we think the profile next year, I would say, would be more or less similar for of this year, and maybe even for the coming few years.
Okay, thank you for that.
Next question comes from George Friedman from Citibank. You may proceed.
Thank you very much for the opportunity. I have two questions. First, you highlighted in the presentation that you're going to do a more proactive management of the capital, taking into consideration the growth opportunities and the level of risk. So considering the coming year, where would you like to be in terms of for your common equity equity ratio? So this is the first question. And the second question regarding the voluntary dismissal program, I understood this has already achieved approximately 3,000 employees and could be even a bit higher as the program closes today. But could you give us a bit more color about how many employees were eligible to the plan, so we understand the hit ratio that you had. And just to, recover here, because I think I lost, the part where you discussed this on the Portuguese call, could you, just go over, this math? You are, dismissing 3% of the bank's headcount. The average income of these people is, higher than the bank's average. So recurring savings could be, 4% or so in terms of staff expenses. Is this a fair assumption? Thank you.
Well, hi, Jorge. Leandro speaking. Regarding to capital structure, we do not have a magic number. And we wouldn't like to provide so because we are living in a country that's an emerging economy. We do have a very good perception that the economy is on track, that we shall see a very good scenario. But if the environment gets worse, we are going to change it. We are going to need more capital and in order to be conservative and respect the value of our shareholders. On the other hand, if the economy really happens in the way you may see, we shall need the adequate capital for that. So we wouldn't like to provide an exact number. Otherwise, you shall not be able to make the right projections. The best way to understand it is that we do have a very good feeling, a very good perception where the business is. And as long as we identify the business opportunities, we see the risks that we have to be provisioning. We are going to consider if there is any sort of excess capital to release it. Otherwise, we shall keep it. So we prefer to state on the concept than with numbers. That provides us flexibility and the best way to handle the bank and the business as a whole. Regarding to eligible employees, I would say that should be between 9,000 and 10,000 employees that were eligible to enroll the program. We had 3,000, around 3,000 employees, a little bit higher than that. That was better than our initial forecast. You have seen that a competitor of ours has released numbers of 2,000 employees, and they have a very close size of ours. So we are happy with that. And now we have to understand and make our calculations because we have until the end of the day to see everyone that has enrolled to the program in order to see their level, their compensation, and how much savings we are doing forward. We can follow on you in our usual meetings as we have and help you on that matter.
Okay, perfect. But the assumption that the average salary for those employees is higher than the bank's average, seems correct, right?
That's correct, because of the years that they have here in the institution. If you consider that they shall be above 15 years, initially 20 years and then 15, pretty much they shall be above average, above the average of the institution as a whole.
Perfect. You're right. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Just as more information, Andre speaking, Jörg. We have also to consider that some positions will have to be replaced, not necessarily increasing the number of employees, but promoting someone from that position, for instance, the manager of a branch. So calculations are a little bit more complicated than it seems at the beginning.
Okay, thank you.
Next question, Jason Mullin from Scotiabank. You may proceed.
Hello, everyone. Thank you. My question is related to the lending market in the individual segment. The three largest types of loans that I see in your portfolio are payroll, real estate or mortgage financing, and credit cards. Can you talk about the current lending spreads in general terms for those three segments versus CDI, and then also kind of compare where those spreads are today versus a year ago, and where are we going here? I'm just trying to understand better how the shift in mix, clearly the lending yields are higher in individuals, et cetera. But I'm just trying to understand how this market is evolving and what the outlook like. Thank you.
Jason, we don't provide the spreads for the specific lines. As you know, the central bank provides us a weekly survey on spreads. Basically, this is a very good base for seeing the average spreads we provide there and even the average spreads for the line. I think I would prefer to refer you and the other investors to that to talk about numbers. But basically, as a proportion, we are growing 16% in mortgage, and basically this is clearly one of the lowest spreads among individuals, but have other benefits in terms of client retention, cross-selling, and other relationships we have with this client. Payroll loan, it is a good product. I think we play with rates that are on average below the market average because we are very competitive. I think we have very good channels for origination since we are big, a bank where that is one of the biggest payers for Social Security retirees. They receive their salaries in our branch. We have the relationships with them. We also have a quite large number of payroll relationships with cities and states that provide us capacity to have a good origination with it. So 78% of our origination in payroll loans are not subject to commissions to credit agents, on which you can see on average commissions like 15% or so. So we are very competitive in that business. So we can actually be more competitive even in rates. Personal loans certainly comes above payroll loans, but we have been very proactive and exploring the opportunities with our clients in terms of pricing. I think that's part of the analytics we mentioned, actually analyzing in more detailed the offers and having the capacity to do that. So I think maybe this is the best answer I can provide you on this.
But maybe just to talk a little bit, I understand that, and we do have those public numbers, but I'm just thinking in general terms, if you see spreads, I mean, are spreads, we know that on some of these products we've seen the loan yields coming down, but is there actually an effort to reduce spreads here? Like, what is an average mortgage rate now in the market? They've been obviously coming down in the last year or two, and, you know, I think that could free up. I mean, is there the need? I'm just trying to think about absolute rates. You know, how do you see that? Are the rates moving more than are we seeing spread compression or rates just coming down with the base rate or not even as
no,
much?
They have been going down gradually over the last
Please wait when we reconnect the... Ladies and gentlemen, please wait. You may proceed.
Hello.
Hi. Thank you very much for everybody's participation. We don't have any other question on the list. So if you have any other questions, please contact the Bradesco's Investor Relations Department. We are available to answer them. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That does conclude Bradesco's conference call for today. Thank you very much for your participation. Have a good day.